Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Hugh Tewitt and your co-host today is Danny Gittings. Danny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're talking today about Bitcoin. The head of JP Morgan spectacularly said this week that the cryptocurrency will eventually blow up. He said it was a fraud, worse than tulip bulbs and won't end well. Jamie Dimon also said he would fire any trader trading Bitcoin for being stupid. Some say that JP Morgan, big banks and central governments want to destroy Bitcoin before it destroys them, and that the people's currency has the potential to become free of their control. Peer-to-peer lending, they say, is more efficient, allowing money to reach those who really need it. Well, Bitcoin prices plunged about 15% overnight against the US dollar after one of the biggest exchanges in China said it will shut down its operation. So is the party over anyway, or is it just starting? Is this Donald Trump of currencies the way of the future? Should Hong Kong be taking advantage of this massive new market? And by the way, what the heck is it anyway? Drop us an email, backchat@rthk.hk, our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Call us 233 88266. After 9:20, can a robot really conduct an orchestra? In our central studio to answer all of those questions, David Webb, shareholder, activist and founder of website.com, Leonard Wesser, who's president of the Bitcoin Association of Hong Kong, and Jesse Friedlander, who's a co-founder and chief investment officer of Devo Partners Limited, and others will be joining us in the course of the program. Good morning to all, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Leonard Wesser, let's go to you first. Bad week for Bitcoin?
Dramatic week. There's been a lot of ups and downs and a lot of uncertainty, especially regulatory uncertainty in China.
I mean, some people would say this is the beginning of the end. I mean, so much Bitcoin is being traded in China. These figures sort of 90% or so on. If China cracks down on it, that's the end. The bubble will burst just like the tulips.
Bitcoin is still up about 30% over a 3 months outlook. I believe that there was a correction needed, and the current news is just a trigger for a partial bubble to burst a little bit.
How about these comments from the head of JP Morgan? I mean, that's more long term, isn't it? He said, well, it's not a correction. The whole thing is going to collapse.
Yeah, he said the whole thing is going to be closed. I think of all the scenarios that are possible about Bitcoin dramatically ending or losing value, being closed is none of them. He also gave a couple of reasons why somebody would use Bitcoin. He mentioned Venezuela in particular. He did mention that authoritarian countries with
He mentioned North Korea as well, didn't he? I mean, yeah. You're the president of the Bitcoin Association of Hong Kong. You don't really want Bitcoins to be something that's associated with people in Venezuela and North Korea, or at least exclusively Venezuela and North Korea, do you?
Or drug dealers.
Thank you, David Webb. Yes.
I think the people of Venezuela and North Korea very much deserve to not have their currency devalued and very much deserve to be able to buy food and import that into their countries. I don't necessarily want Bitcoin to be associated with those regimes, but I also don't think Bitcoin is as useful to those regimes. Those regimes want a currency that they can debase and that they can control, and Bitcoin is none of those two.
Okay, who wants to answer the question? What is Bitcoin? Anyone want to have a
David Webb?
First of all,
you're in charge of it, aren't you?
Nobody's in charge of it.
Please keep this really simple.
Okay. Give us a simple.
What is it? It's a collective delusion.
A simple and impartial outline, please.
Like reality.
The mathematics behind it is quite interesting. I read maths at
university.
Don't go there.
Okay, you don't want the maths either.
I don't want the maths.
Okay, well, what it is not is little shiny bits of gold with the word letter B on them that you often see in any visual representation of Bitcoin. That's just nonsense. Those are actually bits of metal with digital numbers inside them, like fortune cookies or engraved on the outside. What it is is one Bitcoin is represented by 32 bytes of data, or 256 ones and zeros. And proving that you own it is done by issuing a digital signature. The digital signature system has been around for a long time. In fact, Hong Kong passed the Electronic Transactions Ordinance in 2000 to allow people to digitally sign documents with their private key and to receive encrypted documents or emails sent to their public key, because only they can decrypt them.
It's a piece of information that you own.
Yes, and it has no fundamental value.
Yeah.
So it's not backed by some gold in a vault somewhere or by some real currency issued by a government.
Why does gold have a fundamental value when pieces of gold?
Well, at least you can wear it as jewellery, or you can use it for metal conductivity on contacts, on circuit boards.
But that's not the gold is sold at the sort of price it is.
It has a finite supply. It costs money to get it out of the ground. And it does have industrial uses and jewellery uses, so because it glitters. But yes, you have a point in suggesting that perhaps it's not worth as much as people think, and it's more used as a store of value because people say it's a store of value.
So is Bitcoin the new gold then?
No.
Well, Leonard Vesa, what's different to that and tulips? Tulips was it 17th century in Holland? The sort of mad speculation and everyone put vast amounts of money into these tulip bulbs, which don't have any kind of inherent value, but everyone decided suddenly that they were going to put money in them, and that you got a market sort of growing from nothing. Is that what's the difference between that and Bitcoin? What's the difference between that and any currency?
The main difference between tulips and Bitcoin is that you can grow tulips in your garden. But Bitcoins are very difficult to create, and there is a finite supply of them. So they're only ever going to be 21
million Bitcoins. These are rare tulip bulbs. You've got something which is kind of scarce.
They still reproduce.
Yeah, but the Bitcoins are only difficult to create because so many people have piled into this mania. I mean, the first 1.6 million bitcoins were created by one guy on his computer. You can tell because the difficulty rate in the algorithm didn't increase until the first 1.6 million coins had been printed in his bedroom, as it were. It was only after that as you suck more and more people in, then the difficulty level to prove the mathematical problem, which is solved once every 10 minutes on average to generate a new set of bitcoins, and currently they're generating 12.5 bitcoins every 10 minutes, that difficulty level has gone up. And what we've got today is this madness where I saw a video the other day about a bitcoin mine in Inner Mongolia, which is coal-powered from the nearest power station, because that's the very cheap form of electricity. And it's naturally cool because it's quite cold up there. They're using 40 megawatts, and they claim to have about 4% of the world's CPU capacity for processing bitcoins. The implication being that the world collectively is using about 1 gigawatt of power, which is about 20% of Hong Kong's power consumption, for example.
And this power backs Bitcoin.
And so this waste of energy backs Bitcoin at the moment.
But if it loses
popularity, then those machines will just gradually be switched off because it won't be worth running them for the power they consume. And that will shrink back down to a much smaller amount of power, possibly even to one guy in his bedroom.
All right, we're getting slightly off track. Going back to the what's the fundamental difference between Bitcoin and a tulip bulb, or anything that you say, carry shells that you could say is going to be a currency?
So Bitcoins are limited to 21 million in total.
Okay, so it's the number that's important,
okay.
Is it?
Bitcoins are also very easy to store. They're very easy to transact online. Okay. And you can transact them without a central party. You don't need a arbiter. You don't need a bank. You don't need a government to facilitate that trade.
But I could launch Webcoin today.
Yes.
Okay. I'll go one step better. There'll only be 10 million of those rather than 21 million. So they're going to be even scarcer. Yeah. I'll print the first 2 million just to make sure I've got some in my back pocket.
Yeah. That's a very common investment scheme, by the way.
And that's exactly what the founder of Bitcoin did. And all the other cryptocurrencies that have emerged ever since, they all operate on the same principles. There's no reason why Webcoin couldn't be just as popular if I get the right marketing pitch behind it, except that it's been done once already.
If it's useful, if it's easily tradable,
There's really no need to invent a new currency in order to use the blockchain, which is the underlying technology of Bitcoin. So they could, if they wanted, instead trade receipts for US dollars in a bank account or receipts for gold in a depository somewhere.
The people of this world, especially young people, young businesses, people in developing countries, have immense difficulties processing payments. They have difficulties storing value. They have difficulties taking part in an online economy. The online economy has pretty much only allowed Americans, Europeans, people of developed Asian countries to take part in it, and the rest have been shut out of this. And that is because of the way payment systems work, the way banks work. And yes, in Hong Kong, we don't need Bitcoin as much. Our payment systems do work. But in most of the world, people do need some kind of way to transact money online.
Well, they haven't been rushing to adopt Bitcoin. It's been around for years and years now. I mean, this is not new anymore.
Bitcoin is doing incredibly well in South America and Venezuela
Nigeria. No, I think the US dollar is a bit more popular in Venezuela than Bitcoin is.
Let's give Jesse Freelander is co-founder and chief investment officer of Devo Partners Limited. Let's give you a chance to join the discussion.
Thanks very much and good morning. Yeah, just to give my 2 cents or 2 bits worth on this topic, I think to answer the question about the difference between, say, tulips and bitcoins, I think both, both of my colleagues, David and Leonard, are correct in terms of what the points they made. But just to perhaps try to summarize them, one of the key differences is Bitcoin is incredibly easy to transact. So if I'm sitting in Hong Kong and you're sitting somewhere in Europe and I want to send you a tulip, that's quite difficult. In addition, what if I wanted to send you one one-hundredth of a tulip? Impossible, whereas with the Bitcoin, you can transact in these very small units. As was mentioned, you can store them. They last forever. And I think
I don't think Jamie Dimon was suggesting that tulips would have been a currency in 1630.
But just keep to the key question. And so, and also they're widely accepted, at least at the moment, in terms of globally. And I think there is one of the things that did bother Jamie Dimon and bothers a lot of regulators, other people, is the fact that is the same reason it has appealed to a lot of people, is that they sit – it's a fairly democratic, globally democratic system, so it sits outside the boundaries of a lot of regulatory oversight as well as a lot of intermediaries. And what that means is if you are perhaps a dissident in a country or you're in a failed state or you're just in a place where it's difficult to transact, you can actually do business or send gifts to anyone around the world, which is at the moment.
Or if you're a drug baron or you want to launder money. And
both,
So ransoms, crypto ransoms.
Right. Great advantage of it, right? This can be used for more easily used for legal purposes.
Malware attacks.
Regardless of your intent, it's open to everybody. And so that's the appeal, but it's also
a good thing or a bad thing?
It depends where your perspective.
I think the fact that it's attractive to criminals means it's likely also attractive to the average person. Criminals are much faster in adopting new technology and adopting encrypted messaging systems. There are entire industries in Silicon Valley that just look around what criminals do and try to copy that and bring that into
the industry. All right, I take your point about this is more efficient and maybe it's got advantages of storing. But is that why it has acquired so much value? Is that like saying, well, you can use gold in circuit boards or something like that? Is that really not the point? The point is that it's a kind of collective delusion.
And money is a collective delusion.
Exactly,
we accept money because other people believe in it, not because we
believe
in it.
Money is a collective delusion.
No, it's not.
Any currency is a collective delusion.
No, you can actually use it to pay your taxes, for example. Ah. You can buy things.
Well, that's a good point. I suspect this is kind of the key, isn't it?
I haven't yet seen a listed company report its income statement in bitcoins. You know, we had turnover of 200 bitcoins this month or anything like that. They don't. And I went online yesterday to find out where, in fact, I could spend bitcoins. Because actually, somebody sent me a bitcoin a long, long time ago, and it's been sitting in my electronic wallet doing nothing.
And yet there are some large listed companies that accept bitcoin, Dell and Microsoft Expedia.com.
But they convert them straight back into US dollars. They only accept them on their little website.
Yeah, for them it's very useful to transact money.
If they can get out of them very quickly. And this is the real thing, that actually it isn't more efficient, because in order to buy anything with bitcoins, you first got to acquire the bitcoins by sending real currency to a bank or to a Bitcoin exchange somewhere.
You can go to a Bitcoin ATM downstairs and acquire Bitcoins with cash. And
there
is
one downstairs.
Easier. There's one in Sungwan, there's one in Wanzai.
Do these Bitcoin ATMs still exist?
There's about half a dozen now in Hong Kong.
And does anyone actually use them? How much business, you're in the industry, how much business is actually transacted for these Bitcoin ATMs?
Since I don't operate one myself, it's hard to tell, but they do pay rent, and it seems profitable for the operators.
Jesse Friedlander, you are a
I can't actually spend them anywhere. I mean, I looked on there's a map, okay, that someone has put together, which supposedly gives about 10 locations in Hong Kong where I could spend bitcoins, none of which I want to spend anything in.
If you can, in person, you can already use cash. Bitcoin is incredibly useful for paying for things online. If you need to buy a flight and you don't have a credit card, then without Bitcoin, you need to go into a travel agency and pay a very high fee and have, for example, budget airlines unavailable. Peach Air in Japan is going to accept Bitcoin. And to be able to buy bitcoins at a Bitcoin ATM with cash downstairs and pay for your flight online is a huge improvement
now,
for people.
Today, David Webb's point that
there'll
most of these people who do accept bitcoins, they immediately then convert them into what they call real currency. I mean, it's just a marketing tool, really, where they're saying they're going to accept bitcoins. They don't want to actually hold the bitcoins.
For people and companies, bitcoin has different uses.
Not when it's fluctuating by 30% a week, which is what just this week it's come from 4,800 to 3,200, something of that order.
It's true that companies convert bitcoins immediately to US dollars if that's where their accounting is. but that means that Bitcoin is useful for them to transact value. It's not useful for them to store value. For somebody in Venezuela or for somebody in Vietnam, Bitcoin might be more useful to store value because it allows them to more conveniently than cash, US dollar cash, to evade either capital controls or to just protect themselves from inflation.
Jesse Friedlander, did David Webb stumble on the truth when he said that this is a question of tax? Because I've seen people writing about this, saying that basically governments, you've got to pay tax, all right? Death and taxes, all right? You're always going to have to pay tax. And central government and governments oblige you to pay tax, and they want to control the money supply more or less directly through central banks and so on. They will never give up traditional currencies, and they will always be jealous and be controlling of cryptocurrencies because they want to control, they want to have the levers, they want to have their hands on the levers of power through tax and through their currencies. Is that true? So in the end, this is going to, one way or another, it's going to be shut down or it's going to collapse.
Actually, that's, I think, mostly true. Governments certainly have a big interest in maintaining a currency.
Their currency.
Right. But as we also know, a lot of governments are not actually able to control their own currency. They perhaps have it linked, as we do here in Hong Kong, to another currency or a basket of currencies. Or some are actually having just to completely use the dollar or some other form of hard currency. That's one point. The second point is, I think in Switzerland, there's already a canton that's allowing people to pay tax in Bitcoin. So I think we might be surprised at how some governments try to adapt to this new technology as opposed to shut it down.
Why would they do it? What was in it for them?
If you're able to make your economy more efficient because in terms of transaction costs, because when you lower transaction costs or financing costs in the economy, that's actually that's pro-growth. And if this is indeed going to become a global trend, rather to try to meet the trend and stay with it than to close your eyes and back away. So we're already seeing a number of governments around the world trying to adapt this. We've seen comments from Russia in terms of the ruble. We've seen comments from Japan in terms of trying to foster digital currencies. And even, as I mentioned, Switzerland, there's an announcement from, I believe, one canton.
Now, this is an attempt to collect tax Bitcoin with governmental endorsement. But has Japan said we're giving up on the yen and we're going to use Bitcoin? What comments are you referring to?
Right. So we're not sort of at the point yet where a country is saying we're no longer going to have our own sovereign currency. We're just going to use Bitcoin. That day may never come. But what we are seeing are steps by a number of countries around the world to try to embrace the technology and actually facilitate payments in digital currencies. And so we've even seen, you know, we know that there's comments to the Federal Reserve and in the United States and the SEC and other entities are trying to look at it and study and see how this could become embraced in some shape or form or even taxed. So it is actually taxed in the United States. Gains on virtual currencies are taxable. So believe me, they would want to tax it as property, I believe.
How about this point that was raised at the beginning of the program, that maybe one of the reasons of the hostility of the banks and JP Morgan and so on towards Bitcoin is they're fearful. I mean, they make their money from transaction costs, and if Bitcoin forces those down, it can force them out of business or at least reduce
it. If a business can function without a bank account, the banks are in big trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, every time,
doing away with banks, isn't it? This is a way of doing money,
or at least reducing their role.
Banks are not very popular at the moment since 2008. Everybody hates banks. Is this a way we can do business around the world very happily without banks? And everyone should be glad of that.
Absolutely, it already banks a couple of people who would otherwise not be able to take part in a digital commodity, both businesses and individuals. The first Bitcoin block reads, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks. Bitcoin was created in the wake of the last financial crisis as a way to create a financial system that does not need banks, central banks or commercial banks.
So every time, if you're a merchant and you want to collect, cash is fine, but if you want to collect something on a credit card or if I want to send money to a friend or a relative, every time we do that, we go through a process where we pay fees. It could be 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, depending on it. We may have delays. We may have errors. So there's actually a cost every time we do that. That cost is the benefit to those financial intermediaries, which are in essence.
Let me sell it to David Webb. This is a free market dream. We don't need the parasitical banks
You
should be supporting this.
Oh, I'm all for free markets. I just don't think
there's nothing freer than Bitcoin.
No, it's not.
And you presumably also approve of driving down transaction costs, don't you?
I mean, you
would approve of that.
Yes, and I said so when I wrote about Bitcoin 4 years ago on website.com, that there are huge holes in Bitcoin itself, but the desirability of lower transaction costs is not one of them. We would all like to see lower transaction costs. I think that's something that will happen anyway without the need for virtual currencies. We can do it using electronic transactions denominated in real world currencies. You can already send money, for example, person to person on something called PayPal, which has been around for maybe 15, 20 years now.
Which charges between 4 and 8% fees for merchants to accept it.
I said person to person, okay? Now, yes, they charge a fee if you want to run a business with it and accept payments through it as a business. And that fee is comparable to what you would pay receiving credit cards in other ways.
8% for virtual goods.
If you want to just individually send money to each other, you can do that through PayPal. You can also do it through a lot of smartphone apps in the UK, for example, now, that you could just send money to each other's bank accounts through an electronic app for no charge
at all.
It costs the banks almost nothing to provide that add-on service.
Transaction costs are coming down anyway.
They are anyway, but of course another flaw in Bitcoin is that in order to give an incentive for the people running these massive thousands of machines in Mongolia to actually keep them running, they're going to have to charge a fee. The mining of new bitcoins as a reward will run out because the program calls for it to stop at 21 million and to halve its rate of production every 4 years, unlike gold mines, which have been producing at a fairly steady rate for a long time. So the incentive will have to be fees charged by the Bitcoin miners, and they're having their own internal civil wars about how they're going to do that and how to modify the vast number of small transactions going through the blockchain. So, even if it had some utility as a means of transferring money and doing it fast enough not to avoid the fluctuation in its currency value, get value against real currencies, that it would still be the case that probably the transaction fees won't be materially lower than the next best form of payment in real currencies using a PayPal or an Apple Pay or a Google Pay or some other peer-to-peer form of payment.
It's true that there are transaction fees.
There's no reason why we need a new virtual currency to achieve more efficient electronic payments.
Leonard, Professor?
It's true that there are transaction fees in Bitcoin. Those transaction fees
and perhaps over time they will increase. But at the moment, people involved in Bitcoins, they can make their money by finding new Bitcoins. But as David Webb was pointing out, by the nature of the system, that will eventually stop, and then the only way to make money will be out of transaction fees.
That's for sure. In the long run, Bitcoin miners will have to make money from transaction fees to keep Bitcoin
going. So the long-term trend would be for it to increase. Now, you might say they start from such a low base that they'll still end up lower than other forms. But if other forms of transaction fees are coming down and Bitcoin ones are going up, then maybe they'll meet in the middle somewhere.
I believe that in the long run, there's going to be enough transactions, and those transactions are going to be valuable enough to sustain Bitcoin mining with those transaction fees. And those transaction fees are still going to be magnitudes smaller than PayPal's fees or wire transfer fees. The main reason why you would use Bitcoin is because it's available where other methods are not. I do agree that if you do today have a credit card, you're probably still going to use that credit card over Bitcoin. It's still going to be easier to use and cheaper. But if you don't have a credit card, then Bitcoin is the only other thing available to you.
Okay, just on transaction fees, just to recall, in addition to the percentage we might pay on a transaction, there's often a change in the FX rate, the exchange rate, which could be up to 1 or 2%. So just bear that in mind too. There's a hidden transaction cost when we go across currencies between jurisdictions.
But and you were saying that Hong Kong should be in on this. Hong Kong, the government or whatever, the stock exchange.
Absolutely. Great opportunity for Hong Kong. It's happening. The technology's out there. It's being embraced, particularly in China. And we are part of China, but we have a special...
Embraced and shut down, we hear, this morning. No, one of the exchanges has just been shut down.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's Bitcoin is still mostly owned in China. It's most popular in China, and Hong Kong certainly has a role to play in its development.
Could we do that? Could we become involved in financial services for Bitcoin?
Absolutely. There's
if it all collapses, would it hurt us?
Well, again, we should keep perspective in collapse because it's gone up thousands of times over the last few years. So, if you look at the long-term chart, it's performance has been incredible if you've held it.
We should look at Switzerland for how to deal with it.
But just to answer your question, there's lots of businesses that are embracing or using the technology, the currency, et cetera. So I think for Hong Kong, this is certainly an opportunity. There's a lot of venture capital going into this space, so I would hope that Hong Kong could be able to partake in some of these innovations.
Okay, back with more Bitcoin after the news at 9 o'clock. You can drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. Call us on 233-88266 after 9:20. We're also going to be talking about that video. You might have seen the robot conducting an orchestra. What's going on there? Is this the way of the future? The weather forecast, sunny intervals and some isolated showers around. The maximum temperature today about 32 degrees with moderate easterly winds. The outlook mainly fine and very hot over the weekend and early next week. 29 degrees at the moment, relative humidity is now at 81%. We're going to be talking about that robot conducting an orchestra in Italy. What was going on there? Is it possible that robots could do such a thing? Is this a prospect for the future? Joining us for our discussion of Bitcoin now, we have with us Jesse Friedlander, co-founder, chief investment officer with Devo Partners Limited, Leonard Vesser, who's president of the Bitcoin Association of Hong Kong, and David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. Also joining us now is Arthur Hayes, co-founder and CEO of BitMEX. Our email address is backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page as well. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3.
And on our Facebook page, a comment from one listener, I'm very critical of Bitcoin. Henry says, I always found things such as Bitcoin a fraud. The reason is simple. You exchange your hard-earned real money. You can buy things from markets, shops, etc., to cryptocurrency, but can you use Bitcoin to buy property or things from department stores? Can you convert retirement money to Bitcoin? Definitely no. One Bitcoin is now worth about 25,000 Hong Kong dollars, much more expensive than one square foot of property, which is absurd. Who decides the conversion price? What backs up the price? Definitely not gold. Given its opaqueness, it's an ideal medium for money laundering. China has ordered the closure of the market. The Hong Kong Monetary Authority has issued a cautionary reminder. Given all these things, one should smell trouble ahead. A prudent person should stay away from these sort of things. A nice scathing comment there from Henry. Thank you very much, Henry. Let's bring in now Arthur Hayes. Arthur Hayes joins us on the line. Arthur Hayes is co-founder and CEO of BitMEX. Mr. Hayes, good morning to you.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Now, you just heard from one of our listeners that there's still a lot of skepticism around about Bitcoin, isn't there? As we see from Henry's comments.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you see a bit, the price falling overnight. I know it's still up on the year, and China shutting down Bitcoin exchanges. You can well understand people feeling very hesitant.
Yeah, and I basically want to say that to anyone that's
ownership
of Bitcoin.
I think we'll have to try and get you back on a different line because it's very hard indeed to hear you there. Let's go back to our studio. Leonard Weisser, how would you respond to Henry?
Real estate is also only valuable because it's artificially limited. If real estate exists
there in the ground.
No, it has utility. Yeah. You can live in it. You can run your business from it.
You always say if the property price collapses, well, at least you've still got the home to live in or shop to rent, haven't you? Right?
Ask Bitcoin the people of Detroit collapses. How that's going.
But if Bitcoin collapses, you can still look at your ones and zeros at night and feel warm about that.
Well, I mean, David Webb, I would come back to the gold comparison. If gold collapses, you can look at a shiny bar, can't you?
At least gold is somewhat beautiful. You can make nice jewellery out of it. I mean, the bitcoins have absolutely zero intrinsic value.
Gold has only been running
for much
longer.
You will have bits ones and zeros on a piece of paper at the end. When all the dust settles on the implosion of Bitcoin, that's all you'll have, ones and zeros on a hard drive. In fact, some people keep forgetting their private keys and then unable to unlock what the got anyway in bitcoins. There's a famous case of a landfill where a guy lost a hard drive full of them in.
There are also a couple of reasons on why particularly gold became such a useful store value. It also has to do with it being so heavy, which means it's very difficult to fake. It has to do with it being relatively easy to cut and being easy to divide. With it being relatively easy to store, it doesn't degrade, it doesn't rust. And similarly with electronic money, you can look at how value it is from its attributes. Bitcoin is very easy to easily divisible. It cannot be easily controlled. It cannot be easily seized.
Nor can Webcoin or the next one. I mean,
let's take that point up. I mean, this is the point David Webb made earlier about that. I mean, what's to stop David Webb setting up Webcoin? In fact, all kinds of people. It's not only we've talked only about Bitcoin so far, but then probably hundreds of these cryptocurrencies around now, aren't there? Everyone is setting them up now.
Yeah. Well, what's to stop one of the giant tech companies, Facebook, Google, Alphabet, Apple, making it easier for people to send each other money through their payment system? They haven't done it yet, but there's no reason why they couldn't allow people to send in real-world currencies money to each other for free as part of their operating system.
Theoretically, HSBC can allow for cheap transfers throughout the entire world and can give a bank account to anybody in this globe. And HSBC actually tried. But the reason why online payments are so poor is because it's political problems. It has to do with censorship. It has to do with control. It's like HSBC is not allowed.
But then you're getting to the anti-money laundering system, which applies also to anyone exchanging real currencies for bitcoins. I mean, all of the operators of those systems in each country has
gold.
The regulators have said if you want to exchange cash for anything that is readily transmissible, you are basically a money exchanger, and you must do your client due diligence stuff, and you can't accept money from terrorists, drug runners, and so on. So then you have all of that cost, which is associated with the anti-money laundering system in the banking world, is this, those same costs apply to virtual currencies as well.
Webcoin might be able to be forced to do anything, for example, shut people out or limit.
Anyone running a business of converting real currencies into cryptocurrencies is going to have to go through those AML processes and incur those costs.
Happen in China now.
They will charge those fees for conversion into the cryptocurrency, which brings you back to the fact that there is quite a high transaction cost associated with moving money in and out of a cryptocurrency.
The difference is that if you take HSBC's license away in China, HSBC is not going to be able to send money there anymore. If you ban all Bitcoin exchanges, people are still going to be able to buy Bitcoin.
David Webb's not a bank, okay? What's the difference between Bitcoin and, Webcoin doesn't exist yet and probably never will, right? But Bitcoin or Webcoin or
better things to do than
there are lots of these other currencies around. Yeah. What makes Bitcoin unique?
To some degree, it has to do with decentralization and control.
Litecoin, Ethereum, they're all decentralized
They vary, don't they? But certainly some of the other ones are decentralized.
And the main difference between those is network effects.
David Webb is bigger, right?
Being first.
David Webb, you can, you're welcome to try and flog your Webcoin. Sure, you can stand up and say, look, I've invented this currency. If you can get millions of people to invest in it.
I thought I'd send, one.
You're laughing.
I thought I'd start off by sending, say, 50 to each of my 20,000 subscribers and see how it goes from there. Would that be all right?
Of course, this isn't a Ponzi scheme. Let's make that clear. It's not.
And then we'll see if we can inflate it through gambling on a Webcoin exchange. Because, basically what Arthur is running is a similar sort of speculative platform. And that's actually what the main purpose of Bitcoin so far has been: entertainment. People sitting in front of their computers and speculating in the value of this thing, just like watching two gnats climb up a wall or betting on football or anything else. And, in that sense, it has a value as an entertainment until it collapses. And as long as people treat it as just like a flutter at Happy Valley, maybe that'll be all right.
But monetary value is in your head.
Well, it's collapsed several times. I mean, it went from 1,000 down to about 150 at one point.
And then back up to 4,000.
Value is not because it looks nice or because you can use it in jewelry or you can use it in circuits or anything like that. It's imaginary.
It's purely the greater fool theory that somebody else will pay more for it later, so I should get in. And I'm not ruling out the possibility that will happen and that Bitcoin will go to $1 million per coin before it collapses, okay? It's perfectly feasible in a speculative bubble to go to any price you want before the sort of reality sets in and people look around saying, oh, I just realised no one's actually accepting this for anything.
Unless this is really useful and unless people find it
really
somehow
useful.
Solving problems.
In Africa, where people lack access to banks, they've been trading real currencies via mobile phone networks. As a
yes, and they cannot move that money out of the country.
Tell us about fractional reserve banking, David Webb, because that's a real scam, isn't it?
No. No, what it is it does expand the money supply, though. All modern banking systems are fractional reserve banking systems.
So that means that
when you put money in as a deposit, you're lending money to the bank. It puts a certain amount into a reserve as a cushion against bad loans, and it lends out the rest to other people, and thereby increases the amount of money.
When you say it lends out the rest, it doesn't lend out the rest. It lends out an imaginary amount.
It lends out. Let's say it goes around in a circle. So let's say you put in $100.
It lends somebody $10 million, but it's only got $1 million to back that up. Is that right? And then suddenly that there's you've got that extra $9 million floating around.
Well, when it lends money out, it's an asset. When you lend money out, it's an asset of the bank. When you borrow money from depositors, it's a liability of the bank. And banks are always required to maintain net assets. The assets minus the liabilities are what basically represents their capital reserve. So, roughly speaking, if they've lent out $10 million, then they've got about $9 million of deposits.
Well, there we have our answer. Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan are printing money. It's making them rich, and they're very angry that Bitcoin doesn't allow them to do that.
These banks are creating money out of
I said. If they've lent out $10 million, they've got about $1 million of reserves, but that and 10% ratio.
But people accept that because it's useful. And it's the same for any sort of cryptocurrency, isn't it?
It's useful to be able to borrow money to buy a flat, yeah. I mean, it's useful to be able to borrow money to run your business.
Yeah.
And it's useful to be able to store money in a bank when you don't actually need to buy a flat or run a business that day. So
also creates dangerous bubbles.
It
creates dangerous bubbles. Fractional reserve banking being able to go leveraged on houses and on stock and on commodities.
Well, that's you're talking about the broader economy now, and the fact that you can get bubbles in all sorts of things, including dot-com stocks, including
property.
And the
fact that we've been printing money mad for the last 10 years.
Yeah, people will say the only difference with fractional reserve.
Yeah, I don't praise the world central bankers for the way they've flooded the world with money. I don't think that was the solution, but it's politically what people wanted. The governments who were elected by the people who then appoint the central bankers. What they want is not to be underwater on their mortgage loans. They would rather inflate away their debts by having large amounts of money in the system.
You put your money where your mouth is, or your Bitcoin where your mouth is, Dave. How long is this? You can see this Bitcoin bubble, as you think it is. It could last some way.
It's completely unpredictable. I mean, it
could go for several years.
It's random.
It could go for several.
It's been going several years already. There's no reason why people like Leonard can't waste another few years of their life on promoting it.
Well, they're not wasting it. They're making a lot of money.
If you can make money by writing about it as a journalist or running conferences.
Cashing in your bitcoins. I mean, that bitcoin you were sent to must be worth many times what it was worth at the time it was sent to you. I cashed that one in. One bitcoin.
I can't be bothered to figure out how to cash
it. You're a rich man, so you can't be bothered to figure out how to cash what's now $25,000.
Well, I need to open an account with an exchange somewhere and do the know your client stuff with them before they'll let me sell it for cash, and then I can get the cash out, unless there's some other way that Leonard can tell me later.
I'd recommend to hold it.
Okay, I might be rich one day.
I think you were pretty rich on this already. It wasn't worth $25,000 when it was sent to you, was it?
No, it wasn't. I don't know what it was worth.
You do concede, right? I mean, there's a lot of value in that. Even if you don't think it's worth the effort of
it was a bit of a joke. It was just a friend that sent to me as a joke. But you know, this is not your future. But if Hong Kong wants to make some money off of having running hotels and organising conferences and having people come into the city and talk about it, that's fine. We can do that with the next Tulip Mania as well. We can have a conference on tulips. So,
well, there you go. That's financial services. It's just an extension of that.
Oh, of course it is. Yes.
Of the hotel industry. So that's fine. That's what we do. It's what Hong Kong has always done, buying and selling.
Jesse Freeland.
Well, it used to be opium.
Well, Leonard's making a living off it now. So
this is a lot better than opium, surely. Yeah. Anyway, here's a comment from Colin in an email. He says, banks are controlled and regulated. Bitcoin is not. At the moment, Octopus is more useful. I presume with Bitcoin, you need a computer or a smartphone. With only 21 million Bitcoin in circulation, how can it ever get any scale? David is correct. Cryptocurrencies is a great scam for anyone starting them. That comes.
Yeah, it was kind of a design fault that they put it at 21 million. I would have put it at 21 trillion or something, and then had each unit worth much less, because what they've ended up with is tiny little fractions of bitcoins being used, if they're used at all, because you have something called a Satoshi, yeah, in honor of the name behind it, 1/1,000,000th of a bitcoin. Which is, you know, pretty soon that'll be worth a dollar if they keep on inflating it.
So. Yeah, you just top it up a different way. Yeah. But is this a kind of, I don't know, is it something to do with temperament or something? Perhaps Jesse Friedlander. I mean, Colin starts this email by saying banks are controlled and regulated. He means that's a good thing, that banks are controlled and regulated. Of course, a lot of people would say, banks, they're controlled and regulated.
Like, well, it means he feels that your listener feels he can trust them with his money.
This? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But because they're regulated.
Is this just a matter of how you want to view the whole monetary system of the world? You can either say this is a good thing that there are banks, or is it a bad thing there are banks?
Absolutely. I mean, at the moment, I think a lot of people can take comfort that HSBC, Standard Chartered, are regulated financial institutions. They have a lot of oversight, a lot of controls. So when we put our precious savings in there, we feel quite comforted by that. On the other hand, if someone wants to open up an account here or somewhere else, oftentimes it's a very onerous process. If someone wants to get a loan, it's actually become extremely difficult, even, you know, for a mortgage loan, and quite cumbersome. And I hear all kinds of stories from people about infuriated by their experience with the banks. So it, at the moment, it's both. The banks play a very crucial role in the economies. I think the point to this last question, the one before, is recognizing the fact that, yes, Bitcoin is very new. It's very risky at the price. There's no intrinsic value. You can't use it everywhere. So all those are absolutely valid points. But on the other hand, we should recognize how far Bitcoin has come in a very short period of time in terms of acceptance globally, in terms of the businesses and technologies that are using it, as well as other cryptocurrencies, we should say, and that it actually does have some inherent advantages. So whether or not those advantages become attractive enough to continue the growth that we've seen, if that's yes, then I think we'll all be better served by embracing Bitcoin. Or whether if something else replaces it or it's somehow quashed by governments, then the answer will be no. So at this point, it could go either way. But I would say the momentum is certainly in favor of Bitcoin and some other virtual currencies. And we're seeing that both in terms of at the commercial level, at the individual level, and I would say even at the regulatory level, where governments are actually starting to try to tailor some policies to engage with this new phenomenon.
Okay, let's bring in a couple more comments from our listeners on our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free. Anthony says, two points to note here. Firstly, the public rush on buying Bitcoin should be discouraged. Secondly, we shouldn't devalue Bitcoin as a technology that creates a new computing platform. Backchat can do better by stating clearly that cryptocurrency is a new technology. And Stephen says, the real danger of Bitcoin is that it might change the way people think about how money works. Most people consider money to be a finite resource with a physical limit to the amount in existence. But if Bitcoin makes the majority of people start to realize that money can basically be produced at will, then the old "but there isn't enough money" excuse that governments use to prosecute what is essentially class warfare on their population, as we're seeing in the UK at the moment, this old excuse will start to look pretty unfounded, and the legitimacy of the establishment will start to look quite shaky. Thank you very much, Stephen. If you've got any comments, you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free, and leave a comment there.
But Jesse Friedlander and Leonard Vesser, are these two things, because we're kind of talking about the currency issue, and we're kind of talking about the payment issue, are they separable, or are they do they overlap completely? Could you use this technology without having all the controversy over a cryptocurrency?
I don't think they're separable from a technological perspective. But for each user, they can, of course, pick whatever usage they want out of it. They can use it as a payment platform. They can use it to store value.
I would say for Bitcoin, the two are inseparable. Bitcoin is the technology, and it has one specific current purpose, which is, you know, it's effectively digital money. Now, there are other technologies, you know, you talk about Ethereum or some other ones where they become somewhat separable, and other we can leverage those technologies through those platforms, and they can sort of be a de facto currency, but also just a shared technology.
Ethereum is basically the second cryptocurrency, isn't it? The second biggest after Bitcoin. Do you have money in, or do you and your funds have money in other currencies, cryptocurrencies apart from Bitcoin?
So my personally, for full disclosure, I don't own any virtual currency, so I actually don't have a vested interest in one way or the other. So full disclosure there.
You mean you don't believe in them?
Not at all. I actually do believe in the rise.
Get in there, then. And put your life savings into them.
But like any other thing, you know, there is no intrinsic value. But I mean, we could look at the price of a flat in Hong Kong and say, well, is that actually worth X million of dollars? There's a debate around that. So
you can debate its value, but it certainly has some utility value for living.
We have been through this already.
So the point was made by your listener about governments and reliability, and that's the thing, that there is a global competition in the sense that if governments behave badly with their currencies, as Venezuela is currently doing, as Zimbabwe did, for example, they lose credibility and people revert to currencies that they trust, which is often the US dollar, sometimes the euro.
Could it be Bitcoin in future? I mean, it's not inconceivable. Somewhere like Zimbabwe in 10 years' time, their currency collapses. They don't want to rely on
I think it's Bitcoin.
They print
I think it's Bitcoin today, actually. Part of what's actually supporting Bitcoin, in addition to what you could call speculation, which is what's clearly there, is perhaps in certain jurisdictions where people want to get out of their currency for a variety of reasons, but perhaps because it's a very unstable environment, Bitcoin is becoming a very sought after.
Anyone who converted last week has lost one third of their money already. Bitcoin has come down.
Anyone who converted last year,
if they bought US dollars,
David Webb, anyone who converted last year has made a fortune.
Yeah. It's a pure speculation. It's not a store of value. And to suggest that people in Venezuela would rather convert into bitcoins than US dollars is just nonsense. They want something they can, whether it's land or whether it's some foreign currency that they trust, they would rather own that than the Bolivar.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much indeed. A very interesting discussion. Thank you to all our guests. Sorry we weren't able to get Arthur Hayes. We couldn't get a decent line. But in the meantime, many thanks to David Webb, to Leonard Vesser from the Bitcoin Association, and to Jesse Friedlander. Thank you very much indeed, from who's the Chief Investment Officer with Devo Partners Limited. Thank you very much indeed.